From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It was an historic day at the Supreme Court. For the first time in nearly 70 years, the court examined the constitutional right to bear arms. A majority of the justices seemed to indicate for the first time that they believe the Second Amendment is meant to guarantee an individual right to bear arms. There's lots of public interest in this case. People began lining out outside the court 2 days ago in hopes of getting a chance to hear the arguments.
My name is Tara Hennigan. You're basically stripping the people from the district away from having any kind of power whatsoever. They want a ban.
My name is William Clark. I'm from Springfield, Virginia. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. I'm hoping that the guy from D.C. makes a poor case and that they're able to make a nice broad ruling.
I'm Kimberly Ward. I'm from here in the district. We should have guidelines, but we also should have the right to own a firearm to protect ourselves.
Among those who did not have to wait for a seat today was the mayor of Washington, D.C., Adrian Fenty. The district's ban on handguns was struck down as unconstitutional by a lower court, and it is the city's appeal of that decision that the justices heard today. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The Second Amendment reads, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." For most of the last century, the courts have interpreted the amendment to mean that the right to bear arms is a collective right associated with military service, not a personal right. Indeed, the late Chief Justice Warren Burger, a conservative Nixon appointee, used to call the notion of an individual right to bear arms a fraud. Nonetheless, today, it looked very much as if the current Supreme Court, with its newly energized conservative majority, has bought into that argument. Defending the district's ban on handguns, former Solicitor General Walter Dellinger faced a skeptical group of five conservative justices as he argued that the whole reason the amendment was adopted in 1791 was to reassure the states that the new federal government could not disarm state militias. Chief Justice Roberts interrupted almost immediately.
If you're right, Mr. Dellinger, it's certainly an odd way in the Second Amendment to phrase the operative provision. If it is limited to state militias, why would they say the right of the people?
Justice Anthony Kennedy chimed in.
In effect, the amendment says we reaffirm the right to have a militia. We've established it. But in addition, there is a right to bear arms.
Then came Justice Scalia, the court's most celebrated hunter.
But why isn't it perfectly plausible, indeed reasonable, to assume that since the framers knew that the way militias were destroyed by tyrants in the past was not by passing a law against militias, but by taking away the people's weapons. That was the way militias were destroyed. The two clauses go together beautifully.
Justice Kennedy asked how the amendment could have applied only in a military context.
It had nothing to do with the concern of this remote settler to defend himself and his family against hostile Indian tribes and outlaws, wolves and bears and grizzlies and things like that.
When you read the debates, the congressional debates, the only use of the phrase keep and bear arms is a military phrase.
Even if there is an individual right to bear arms, Dellinger argued, that right would be subject to reasonable restrictions, including bans on certain types of weapons. Chief Justice Roberts.
What is reasonable about a total ban on possession?
What is reasonable about a total ban on possession is that it's a ban only on the possession of one kind of weapon, of handguns. It's been considered especially dangerous.
So if you have a law that prohibits the possession of books, it's all right if you allow the possession of newspapers?
The difference, said Dellinger, in effect, is that guns kill. Justice Ginsburg pointed to the 42 states that have state constitutional provisions specifying individual gun rights while at the same time allowing some weapons to be banned. Dellinger replied that the lower court decision striking down the D.C. gun ban would not allow many existing restrictions, such as the ban on machine guns and armor-piercing bullets. Justice Scalia.
I don't know that a lot of people have machine guns.
I think
or
the number is
piercing bullets. I think that's quite unusual.
Well,
but having a pistol is not unusual.
The number of machine guns, I believe, is in excess of 100,000.
Summing up, Dellinger argued that regulating guns for reasons of safety is a quintessentially legislative, not a judicial function.
This text contemplates regulation of inherently dangerous weapons. It's a kind of right where, even if you recognize it, deference needs to be given to the legislative resolution rather than have courts try to decide how best to resolve the statistical and methodological debate.
Following Dellinger to the lectern was Solicitor General Paul Clement, representing the Bush administration. Yes, he said, the right to bear arms is individual. Justice Souter was skeptical.
In the 18th century, someone going to hunt a deer would have thought of himself as bearing arms? I mean, is that the way they'd talk?
Clement argued that even if there is an individual right, it should still be subject to reasonable regulation, not the higher standard adopted by the lower court in this case, a standard that assumes most regulation to be out of bounds. Without more leeway for regulation, he said, it would be difficult to argue that machine guns, which are a standard military issue, could be banned in civilian life. Justice Ginsburg.
Specifically, there's a whole panoply of federal laws restricting gun possession. Would any of them be jeopardized under your standard?
No, said Clement, but if the lower court standard is upheld, many federal laws might indeed be struck down. Chief Justice Roberts questioned whether the court needs to establish any standard right now.
I'm not sure why we have to articulate some very intricate standard that it would apply in every case.
The third lawyer to argue today, representing those challenging the D.C. handgun ban, was Alan Gura. The justices peppered him with questions about what the standard should be for evaluating gun restrictions if the court decides there's an individual right. Gura said the government should be able to ban weapons that are not appropriate for civilian use. Justice Ginsburg.
Why wouldn't a machine gun qualify? General Clement told us that that's standard issue in the military.
But it's not an arm of the type that people might be expected to possess commonly in ordinary use.
Chief Justice Roberts, what about restrictions on age and requirements that weapons be trigger locked?
There's always a risk that the children will get up and grab the firearm and use it for some purpose other than what the Second Amendment was designed to protect.
Gura fudged, saying there could be a requirement that weapons be stored in a vault. Justice Ginsburg.
What about a requirement that you obtain a license to have a handgun?
Justice Ginsburg, that would depend on the licensing law itself.
Justice Souter.
Can we also look to current conditions like current crime statistics?
The answer came from Justice Scalia.
All the more reason to allow a homeowner to have a handgun.
Justice Breyer summed up the problem.
Do you want thousands of judges all over the United States to be deciding that kind of question rather than the city councils and the legislatures that have decided it in the context of passing laws?
The court's decision will provide at least part of the answer to that question. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.